wherein consists the sinfulness of that estate whereinto man fell. The sinfulness of that estate whereinto man fell consists in the guilt of Adam's first sin, the want of original righteousness, and the corruption of his whole nature, which is commonly called original sin, together with all actual transgressions which proceed from it.
In a previous question, we asked whether we sin because we're sinners, or whether we're sinners because we sin. And we noted that it's in the first instance there, that we sin because we're already sinners. In other words, all of our specific sins, the disrespect or breaking the Lord's day or dishonoring our parents or lying or whatever, these specific sins actually come from or flow from the fact that we're born as sinners. We're born with a sinful nature. And so we can go from our specific sins, trace them back to the source of our sinful nature, and then we can go from there, our sinful nature, and trace that back to the first sin, Adam's first sin. So we talked about a big theological word which is important for children to understand, the word imputation. And we showed how we see imputation, which is legally, you know, crediting something to the account of someone else, reckoning them as such. That's imputation. We noticed that there were three ways in which imputation works its way out in Scripture. There's the imputation of Adam's sin to his posterity, but then we come to Christ and the Savior, and we see that the elect's, the sin of God's elect people is imputed to Christ. So he who knew no sin was made sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. And Christ's righteousness is in exchange imputed or credited to the account of the elect. So this is an important concept that the Bible gives us. As we go on in this next catechism question, number 18, it's asking about the sinfulness of that estate in which man fell. And we're going to trace out some of the implications here. So you think of a tree. Right, here's a tree. And that tree has all sorts of fruit on it. So it's fall, and there's apples or peaches here in South Carolina, pears, cherries, what have you. There's all this fruit that comes out on the tree in the fall. But underneath, we've got, of course, things that we can't see, right? There's roots that are going down in the ground. And all these roots spread out all over the place underneath the ground. So you look at the tree, you see the tree, you see the fruit. You can't see the roots that come way down into the ground underneath. And yet there's a connection. These roots are what feed the tree and enable it to produce fruit. So water comes down and so on and so forth. And there's nutrients in the soil, and all of those go up the tree and are used as nutrients to help it produce fruit. So you can think of our actual sins, the actual sins that we do every day, as the fruit. So that's, you know, you're mean to your brother or sister, or you don't pick up your toys, whatever it is. You have these actual sins. Every time, the actual sins are every time we break God's law, right? Every time we break God's law. And what we see is, underneath all of this, as I was explaining a minute ago, is what we call original sin. We're tracing things back to Adam's first sin. And this is what feeds, if you will, it's the source for our actual sins. And you can look, for example, at Mark 7, I believe it is, verse 21, which talks about this. So there's a connection between these two. And let me illustrate this for you. Why do we die? The answer is because of sin. We die because we are sinners. There was no death in Eden prior to Adam's first sin. As a result of his sin, death comes into the world. And so people die because they're sinners. So you think about this for a second. You have little babies, and they're beautiful, and they're small, and they're not able to run around and break toys. They're not able to talk and say no to their parents or to be disrespectful and so on. And yet babies still die. They even die in the womb. And they die sometimes outside of the womb. How is that possible? Well, if you understand the connection between sin and death, then you can answer the question. Babies are sinners. Babies do have a sinful nature. And as sinners, they're able, it is possible, they're capable of dying. So you can see how this these things are connected. Now, the question here is especially emphasizing the sinfulness of that sin. And we're told three things about the sinfulness of the sin. We're told about, first of all, the guilt, right? The guilt of Adam's first sin. This is part of the sinfulness of sin. And I should explain, we see this in Romans 5, as we've already alluded to. When I say guilt, let's be sure we're clear on this. Sometimes we'll do something wrong and we get this feeling inside of us. It's our conscience. And our conscience is telling us, you did something wrong. And sometimes we'll describe that as feeling guilty. So I feel guilty about something I've done. When we talk about the guilt of Adam's first sin, we're not talking about that feeling that we get inside of us when we've done something wrong. That's not the way the word guilt is being used here. That would be a subjective use of the word guilt, which is perfectly fine, but it's not what's intended here. There's also a different kind of guilt, if you will, an objective guilt, and that's referring to the fact that there's a clear record that we've broken the law. So let's say you have a person who's committed a crime, and they're caught and they're brought before a judge, and there's witnesses and there's clear, unequivocal testimony that they've actually committed this crime. The judge is going to stand up at the end of the trial and he's going to say, I have to now give my verdict, and he's going to hit his hammer on the desk, and he's going to say, I hereby declare you guilty. Now, what the judge is not saying, I declare that you feel guilty about something. Maybe the criminal does. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't feel remorse over what he's done. The judge, when he says, I declare you guilty, is saying, I judge that you have indeed broken the law. Here's the law. You've broken it. So we talk about the guilt of Adam's first sin. That's what we're talking about. God's verdict that we have broken the law. There's an objective proof that we have transgressed God's commandments. The second thing that's mentioned is the want, or we could say lack, of original righteousness. The lack of original righteousness. You'll see this in Romans 3 and verse 10. So, whereas man was created good and upright and holy, and he had righteousness and he was sinless, now he lacks that. So it's showing the sinfulness of sin. He is lacking that original righteousness. And then thirdly, we see the corruption of man's whole nature. The corruption of his whole nature. So just as we have and a testimony that we've broken God's law, and that's outside of us, if you will, there's also within us a corruption, a pollution, a defilement. Our whole nature, so every part of our soul, the way we feel, the way we think, you know, the things we do, the things we love, our consciences, all of that, plus everything in our bodies, right? Our bodies end up being members of unrighteousness, Paul says. We use our eyes and ears and mouth and hands and feet and so on in ways that are sinful. So we're stained with sin. Everything about us inside and out as a result of Adam's first sin is stained. It's polluted. It's dirty as a result of that sin. Every part of us is corrupt. So this is highlighting one of the aspects of the sinfulness of this first sin. So there's the guilt, and we have, secondly, the lack of original holiness. It's not there anymore. And we have, on the flip side, the corruption of our whole nature. So, as I said, it's both inside and outside. We have an inherent sinfulness about us. Everything that we do is tainted by sin. And this, this also, I think, is a good place to bring up what we call total depravity. Now, we'll come back to this later on. But total depravity. We'll come back to what we sometimes call the doctrines of grace or the 5 points of Calvinism. Those 5 points are often presented as an acrostic where you have TULIP, and each letter stands for one of the 5 points. The first one, the T in TULIP, is total depravity. So, when we say total depravity, we're saying that our whole nature is corrupt. We're not saying that man is as bad as he possibly could be, that every individual is as bad as they possibly could be. No, they could be even more evil and more sinful. But it's saying that when it says total, it's meaning every aspect of us. So every part of us is is depraved or sinful, affected by sin. As I said, our understanding and our will and our affections and our conscience and our memory and our bodies and so on, they're all affected by sin. So that the Lord tells us in many places, but Romans 3 would be a good example, that there are none that are righteous. No, not one. That there are none that seek after God, that there are none that do good. That man, left to himself, without God's grace, without Christ and the gospel, cannot do anything but sin. His whole nature is corrupt. So everything he does is sinful. You say, well, what about when you help an old lady cross the street? An unbeliever helps an old lady cross the street. Well, that's a form of civil goodness, right? But the fact is, it's not done to the glory of God. It's not done out of sincere love for God. It's not done in a pursuit of honoring the Lord. And so even those things that have the appearance of civil good are not deemed righteous, are not deemed as acts of true goodness before the Lord. The only way that a man is able to do what pleases the Lord is by his grace. So we saw in a previous question, you'll remember those four categories: before the fall, after the fall, after conversion, and then in heaven. Man is not able to not sin, left to himself. Whereas the Christian is able both to sin and to not sin by God's grace. And so here in question 18, it says, wherein consists the sinfulness of that estate wherein two men fell? The sinfulness of that estate wherein two men fell consists in the guilt of Adam's first sin, the want of original righteousness, and the corruption of his whole nature, which is commonly called original sin, together with all actual transgressions which proceed from it.